And the court will proceed to the fourth case, the United States versus Lockwood. Mr. Truitt.
Thank you, Your Honor.
May it please the court. We're here today because at the conclusion of the sentencing hearing, Judge Sharp, the district court judge for the Northern District of Indiana, granted special leave to Mr. Lockwood to appeal. And one of the issues before the court is whether Judge Sharp granted or possessed the authority to grant that special leave. Before we get to that, we probably need to address a couple of the predicate issues. Since this court decided Bones, I guess is the correct pronunciation, concerning appeal waivers, we need to acknowledge that the appeal waiver in this case, though not as artfully drafted as the one in the Bones case, clearly refers to a maximum sentence imposed by statute. Waive the right to appeal his sentence and acknowledges that he can be sentenced up to the statutory maximum set forth in paragraph 9D. The D is a misprint, but certainly 9C clearly states that the maximum term of imprisonment is 10 years, and in his plea and in the plea colloquy clearly acknowledges that the court may impose a term up to that limit upon him. This court approved and adopted
the second. The problem is, I don't think there's any doubt that the judge before sentencing could strike the appeal waiver, but the appeal waiver was part of a bargain. So if you get the appeal waiver thrown out, you can't get the benefit of that acceptance of responsibility discount. Everything goes back to square one. You have a new negotiation.
Well, I think we need to discuss this, Your Honor. I've enjoyed reading these cases on describing plea negotiations in a criminal case as if it were a negotiation between IBM and Microsoft.
Look,
and
that's not
there
gonna
isn't
get you
much
any,
negotiation.
That's not going to get you anywhere. That's not going to get you anywhere. The
well,
point is,
Your Honor,
you got the government. You gave up your right to appeal,
that's
and you
correct.
Got something in return.
I,
now, if you want to have your appeal, which is fine, you have to give back what you got in return for surrendering that right.
Yes, and that's I agree with that. And then we would stand the risk that the judge would find that we did not accept responsibility,
right.
Though the evidence,
so
I think,
you're accepting
clearly,
that. You're accepting
yes, and I think the thing of more value, though certainly less value with Judge Sharp than Judge Miller, is the recommendation, a binding recommendation for a low-end sentence. That certainly does have value, and with Judge Miller would have more value than Judge Sharp, but that's immaterial. Yes, there was a bargain for exchange. But I think the problem is a number of these cases, the person has appealed when the judge has just given a standard instruction or advisement at the conclusion of the sentencing that all defendants in federal court have the right to appeal, and in order to do that, you have to file your notice of appeal 10 days, da-da-da-da-da. This wasn't this case. There wasn't a misunderstanding. This was a specific leave of the right to appeal because the judge was very troubled by the nature of the proceedings, by the timing of the government's claim, and I think some of the issues that have become to the surface as a result of the three Supreme Court decisions now, where at least five members of the Supreme Court said you have the right to a jury trial, and you can certainly, I think, extend that to you should have the right to the protections afforded by a jury trial when your sentence is going to be increased by conduct that you were never charged with or found guilty of.
Well, let me. And I, well, I, wait, I'm lost. You just want a Palladino remand, right? That's all you want?
That's the only remedy I'm entitled to, Your Honor.
So, well, and everything will be open, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
You mentioned Judge Miller and Judge Sharp. Is there any reason it won't go back to the same judge?
It'll go back to Judge Sharp, yes, Your Honor.
Well, it'll go. It won't just be a Palladino remand because, in order to get any kind of relief, you have to give back the plea agreement. So it would go back for resentencing.
That's correct, Your Honor.
You want resentencing, right?
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Truitt. Mr. Holler.
Do you disagree with the Palladino remand?
Your Honor, we are at this point standing by our brief. We believe that the appeal waiver should be upheld and that it should be dismissed.
I don't understand that. Under the rules, before the sentence, the judge can throw out the guilty plea, for whatever good reason occurs to him, correct?
That's correct. The judge could have done that.
That's what he did, in effect, right?
Well, I don't
believe
that he did.
Because your opponent agrees that we have to treat this as the a rejection of the guilty plea, so that you are not stuck with the concessions you made in exchange for the waiver of appeal.
Well, I understand that that's what he is saying, Judge Posner, and if that's the route the court takes, then we would assume, I think we would have to assume, that the plea is going to be rejected.
Precisely,
I mean, that's
yes.
The option.
Right.
But
right.
Our position is just that the court did not do that. The court said it was accepting the plea. And under those circumstances, once the court has accepted the plea agreement, the court has to accept
clearly
all.
Clearly, he didn't, because an important part of the plea agreement was the waiver of the appeal. So what he did was he rejected a piece of the plea agreement, the judge did. Well, he shouldn't have done that. He should have rejected the whole thing.
If he had wanted to do that, yes,
right.
Your Honor. Well, so I guess that then the issue would be, does it go back? He can't just take paragraph 9J
right,
out of the plea
that's
agreement.
That's the important thing, right.
He cannot do that. And so the issue is just what he did.
Yeah, I mean, so he did something. I mean, you could go back, you could send it back to him and say, what did you really want to do, Judge Sharp? Did you want to throw out the whole thing? Because you could do that or you could accept the waiver, but you couldn't, cut it apart. Then
right.
He could do what he wanted, right?
Well, I mean, essentially, Your Honor, if you look at the plea agreement, I mean, if all that the judge did was cut out paragraph 9J, then the defendant is still bound by paragraph 9I that he not request any kind of departure, and the judge is bound by, I believe it's paragraph 9E or F, that he has to give the minimum of the guideline range. So if all that's happening is that plea, paragraph 9J is out, I think all we're doing is sending it back and saying the judge is bound to impose a 57-month sentence again under the terms of the plea agreement. It would seem to me. So the only other option is that the plea gets rejected on remand, and we start back with the plea's rejected. The defendant has to decide whether he wants a whole new change of plea hearing or whether he wants to proceed to sentencing. That's where we're at. I agree with that, Your Honor.
So with a reverse and remand?
The government is preserving its issue that in light of the cases in the other circuits, the Fifth Circuit, the Tenth Circuit, and all of those circuits, I don't know that the intent of the judge should necessarily matter. We have we have the court on the record saying it accepts the plea agreement and then saying it's granting an appeal. And under the precedent of those cases, the government still would maintain that we have a judgment and conviction, we have a sentencing memorandum that doesn't mention these documents at all, and that the proper remedy is just to say we have a plea agreement with an appeal waiver and the appeal should be dismissed. In the alternative, if the court is going to reject and go the other way, I think the only way to view it is as Judge Posner does. But we're still maintaining what we say in our brief. Okay. If there are no further questions, we would ask that the appeal be dismissed.
Thank you, Mr. Holler. Mr. Short.
If there is a appeal remand or a Palladino remand, Judge Sharp will have to advise this court whether he wishes to retain the sentence that he imposed or would be willing to consider a different sentence. This court has clearly stated within the last two or three months that all sentencings or resentencings are subject to the provisions of Booker. So certainly on a remand, if Judge Sharp would accept a remand, then he could determine whether this was a reasonable sentence and whether this four-level increase under the possession of a firearm in connection with another felony offense results in a reasonable, or this enhancement pursuant to that, yeah, results in a reasonable. So we go back to square one, yes, but I think we go back to square one in a different environment.
Yeah, Mr. Truitt, were you counsel below?
Yes, I was, Your Honor.
But let's go back, if we can, to the sentencing. What occurred here? I mean, you were there, and Mr. Hall, you were not the prosecutor, right, in this case?
No, Your
Honor. Yeah.
What more do we have here than a district judge unhappy with the guidelines and editorializing and then adding an additional comment that, I'm going to create some special appeal? I mean, what do we have beyond that?
I think Judge Sharp has gone on record numerous times, and this court has probably read it, that he is not the largest fan of the sentencing guidelines. But I think he was troubled with the process. I think he was troubled with the government raised their claim in their objection to the pre-sentence report, because the pre-sentence report, the initial pre-sentence report that was not shown to the judge, though their recommendation was the same, did not include that enhancement. And then the evidence that was presented was a summary, an oral summary of two or three police reports generated by the Chicago Police Department. And I think Judge Sharp was troubled by the process as
Mr.
as Trude, well
you said
as
the judge didn't see the initial pre-sentence report?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. I think only after the objections and any corrections, resolution of those objections are made.
So it was a process of the probation department providing both sides with the proposed pre-sentence report.
That is correct.
Objections taken and then...
Right. And if those objections cannot be resolved, which they were not in this case, then Judge Sharp did see my objections and saw the objection of Mr. Padilla, and that formed the issue as to whether this enhancement should apply.
Well, when Judge Sharp speaks about, I would love to see this issue presented to the Court of Appeals, what issue do you think he is referring to specifically, Mr. Jordan?
I think the process, Your Honor.
Well, process, you know, we're all in the process.
I understand. I understand.
It's just too global for me. I need a narrower assessment, if you can give it, of what we're talking about when we're talking about process. Because I'm concerned about process honoring the procedures that are allegedly in place when we have competent counsel for the government and a defendant, and we have a process to accept a plea.
I think one of the things that Judge Sharp was concerned about was that at no time prior to the government's objection was there any mention in the plea agreement of any conduct other than a mere possession of the firearm.
Then how about a two-hour break for reflection by both sides on that and reconvene and proceed? I mean, is it any more than that? How does this become an issue for the Court of Appeals, it seems to me? If all this is information not brought timely to the interested parties, then isn't it all about, at that time, a call for further reflection or information sharing or whatever?
I suppose that would have been an option. That option, I guess, was not requested.
Well, the plea agreement had been accepted.
That's correct, Your Honor.
There's so no, everybody was bound by it.
That's correct, Your Honor. And we're not disputing that. We accepted a plea agreement that contained the appeal waiver.
So the only thing that, I mean, if we had had some discussion would be the idea of the government dropping its request for an enhancement.
That's correct, Your Honor. Or perhaps
the agreement was locked in.
Right. But
the judge couldn't reject it at that point.
Yes, sir.
That's correct, Your Honor. It was locked in. However,
well, why do you say the judge couldn't reject it? He hadn't sentenced yet.
That's correct. I mean, yes, he had announced his proposed sentence and his proposed findings, but he could have allowed the defendant, if he found he could have either rejected it or I guess he could have allowed the defendant to withdraw, found just cause for a withdrawal of his guilty plea.
Well, I can't recall how that rule's written. I can look it up here. I don't know what point he is stuck with it. It's that portion in which the judge has no discretion.
Correct. Before he accepts the plea, there is a right to withdraw,
right,
once he accepts the plea agreement. And he found the defendant, usually when there's a right to appeal, and usually, or when there's a binding plea agreement, they take the plea agreement under advisement.
Right.
Pending receipt of the pre-sentence report,
right,
and that's the preferred method.
But that did not happen here?
No, he did not specifically take it under advisement. He made a finding at the conclusion of the guilty plea hearing. He made a finding that there was a voluntary, knowing and voluntary entry of a plea of guilty, and he set sentencing. So he didn't make any specific statement as to the plea agreement, whether he specifically accepts it or specifically takes it under advisement.
But he proceeds to sentence.
Yes. And we, right. So
what jurisdiction does he have after that to say it, to do anything other than unless there's a motion to reconsider or a motion to withdraw?
Well, I guess pursuant to this court in a previous ruling, he doesn't have any jurisdiction to do anything. We would like to see, of course, we could argue, as Judge Posner suggested, that this was tantamount to a setting aside of the plea agreement, had the effect of that, even though those words were not used.
Well, what if we have a situation where we have district judges saying at the conclusion of a sentencing, Mr. Truitt, this was a troubling set of events, and but my job was to impose this sentence, and regrettably, I can't do anything about it. Should that be an invitation
to appeal?
No, you can see where I'm concerned about.
I understand. I would like to see, from a defendant's point of view, that in those situations, and I would imagine that they're rare, where the judge is really troubled either by the process or by the result, and that he feels that the Court of Appeals should have some input. And Judge Posner in Bones talked about the tremendous volume that you people have, but these Court of Appeals, especially or these waivers of appeal, especially in post-Booker, really deprives the defendant from having any kind of input in the appellate process. Now, we certainly have the right not to enter into a plea agreement and insist on our right to appeal, and
well,
I understand
that. Going back
that.
To that issue, I Rule 11 says that after the court imposes sentence, the defendant may not withdraw a plea of guilty. Before the sentence is imposed, defendant may withdraw a plea of guilty if he can show a fair and just reason for requesting the withdrawal. So one interpretation of what happened, although obviously happened in very irregular fashion, is that the judge, in effect, invited withdrawal of the guilty plea because he was troubled by, the procedure. I mean, that's not the formality of what happened literally, but that's one possible interpretation, maybe.
Thank you. I'm sorry, Judge Keeney.
And also, there's a provision that agree that a specific sentence or sentencing range is appropriate disposition of the case, or that a particular provision of the sentencing guidelines or policy statement or sentencing factor does or does not apply. Such a recommendation or request binds the court once the court accepts the plea agreement. Is that what happened here?
The recommendation, a binding recommendation, was not quite as specific as one of those. It just said that the judge, if he accepts the plea agreement, must impose a sentence at the low end of the guideline range.
Well, that's I think that falls within that.
Yes.
But you're stuck, like, at least as I read that, you're stuck once he accepts the plea agreement, not when the sentence is imposed, but once the plea agreement is accepted.
Correct. Yeah. And the only reason we're here was, you know, without those words,
no,
we would have licked our wounds and gone on to another day.
No, we appreciate the ticket that you,
thank
arrived,
you
arrived on. All right, thank you to both counsel, and the case is taken under advisement.